Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Vaccine, I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late.
It's not too late, baby, it's not too late, and you really are gonna make it. You're gonna be so strong.
Fantastic.
The great Carol King with her own vaccine song, inspired, she says, by Dolly Parton.
Tomorrow, we, of course, are going to be doing our own. Willie and I are. go ahead and put up the tweet. Harmony, if you could put up the tweet, that would be great. There.
Sure.
Thank you, Dolly Parton, for inspiring me to record my own vaccination song, COVID Vaccine. Vaccine Save Lives. That's inspiring. And Willie, yes, our duet tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of a
doo-wop. The happiest girl.
Yeah.
Doo-wop.
A doo-wop version of the happiest girl in the whole USA. It's going to be very exciting. We changed the words around a little bit. We think we can get 50 million new vaccines by tomorrow evening, just on the strength of our song. Speaking of big numbers, Willie, it looks like Oprah's interview with Meghan and Henry. What's his name?
Come on.
Harry. Sorry. Yeah. Forgot about that. Looks like they outrated your interview with Oprah from the spring of '04.
When we had her in the restaurant in Chicago that day. Remember that? Back in the Morning Joe days. The 17 million people watched, and that's just sitting down that night watching it. Obviously, many, many more watched it online, probably watched it yesterday after they heard everything about it. That's an incredible number in this day and age of fractured media. So Oprah still gets it done with a little help from Harry and Meghan.
And some big news. I mean, to say that they were asking questions about what the child would look like. My God.
But providing no names.
Well, no names, except it was Charles.
Come on. Yeah,
okay.
Totally.
Sure. No names. We're not going to tell you.
Totally outed.
But it was Charles.
Outed his father. Because he said, oh, no, it wasn't grandma. Was it granddad?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it wasn't granddad.
No.
But it was a member of the family.
Yeah.
Who doesn't have a lot of hair.
Yeah.
Well, come on. I mean, they have totally exposed the next king of England. I mean, they need to come out with, if you're going to have that explosive of a charge, and this, for some reason, this offended people yesterday when I said it. If you're going to have, no, I'm saying that I said, you know, you need to give us a name. If you're going to accuse an institution that's been around for over 1,000 years of that type of racism, and the whole world is up in arms about it, you got to provide a name, unfortunately, Willie. And I think, again, the right now, the presumption is that it's Charles, so he's doing a grave disservice to his father if it's not Charles.
Yeah, well, that happened yesterday morning, actually. Obviously, when that comment got such traction and so offended so many people, it got their curiosity up. Oprah came out yesterday and said, Harry reached out to me and said, it's not my grandmother and it's not my grandfather. So he's sort of leaving these breadcrumbs on the trail. It's a small group of people who it could possibly be. And as you say, if that claim is true, that's the next king of England who is alleged to have asked those questions.
Right.
Well, but we'll leave it right there.
And no more hints, but it rhymes, Oprah, with morals.
What?
I mean, come on. No, I just, look, They got to give us an A.
It in the way he, now I'm not saying this is definitive about that claim, but the way that Harry talked about his dad in that interview, how he doesn't return my calls, how we're working on our relationship, that the bond isn't terribly close right now between father and son.
Well, and also, it's kind of like when I, at dinner table, pre-COVID, and I say something, and Mika looks over me, you said what? It's like when Harry came out for his part of the interview, he found out that she had passed along to Oprah what he had told her, which was, you know, somebody questioned what the color of the baby was going to be. And he was like, oh, no, I'm not going to talk about that. So,
Whew. Okay.
Let's get to the news
this morning. The CDC released new guidelines yesterday for those who are fully vaccinated, offering hope that life could soon return to normal.
We've been through a lot this past year, and with more and more people getting vaccinated each day, we are starting to turn a corner. Fully vaccinated people can visit with other fully vaccinated people indoors without wearing a mask or physical distancing. Visit with unvaccinated people from a single household who are at low risk of severe COVID-19 disease indoors without wearing masks or physical distancing. And refrain from quarantine and testing following a known COVID-19 exposure if the vaccinated person remains asymptomatic.
The CDC still recommends that fully vaccinated people wear well-fitted masks, avoid large gatherings, and physically distance themselves from others when out in public. And vaccination does not mean people can move freely around the country. The CDC said people should continue to follow their local health department's travel recommendations. Among those critical of the CDC announcement is emergency physician and public health professor Dr. Lena Wen, who told the AP, quote, the CDC is missing a major opportunity to tie vaccination status with reopening guidance by coming out with such limited guidance. They are missing the window to influence state and national policy. Willie?
Let's dig into this with our friend, Dr. Vin Gupta. He's a pulmonologist and NBC News medical contributor. Dr. Gupta, it's great to see you. I don't think families have ever been so emotional about a PowerPoint slide as they were when they saw this one from the CDC yesterday that showed the two green grandparents, theoretically, if you want it to be a grandparent and the child and a grandchild,
they're so cute.
And lead, saying, you know what, if you are vaccinated, you can go see your family. You don't have to be masked. And after a year apart, you can hug your children and you can hug your grandchildren in most cases, unless they're high risk. So as you heard these guidelines, Dr. Gupta, what do they mean and what do they not mean?
Good morning, Willie. Good to see you. You know, what they mean is that vaccination will keep you out of intensive care. I think we actually have a slide showing what that means, what the purpose of vaccination means, a set of CT scans if your team has it on deck here. And really, and you're showing it right now, this is the point of vaccination, Willie. If you're, say, a grandma or a granddad, you want to see your grandchildren and they're nearby, you can go because you know what? Those vaccines are going to keep you out of intensive care, keep you from developing lungs that are seen on the right. That's key. And let me just put a quick word in here. That applies to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I keep hearing across the country, is that inferior? Is that, well, I want the Pfizer vaccine. No, all these vaccines are going to keep you out of intensive care. So that's what the CDC is getting at here, that these vaccines now are going to protect individuals. So we need to balance the head and the heart here. We need to get grandparents to see their grandkids, and that's okay. What it's also acknowledging, Willie, is that we don't yet know with certainty whether these vaccines actually stop transmission of the virus. So it's weird. Mm. How can you be kept out of the intensive care, but, oh, well, you could potentially still be a carrier? That's what we're still trying to figure out. So that's why it's guarded. And to push back a bit on Dr. Wen, I see where she's coming from. But let's remember here, we had 12,000 deaths just in the last week from COVID-19. It is still, Willie, the leading cause of death in this country week over week. We're still in the middle of a pandemic, 70,000 cases. We're predicting about 65,000 more deaths by July 1st. It could be over 130,000. At least IHME is predicting it if more governors follow the lead of Governor Abbott in Texas. So this is still a very precarious situation, which is why you're seeing a phased set of guidance. There's going to be a version two before long, where I'm sure travel is going to be offered or recommended for individuals who are vaccinated once there's more vaccine. But so there will be a version two of these this guidance. It will be continue to be readapted. But let's be patient here.
And Dr. Gupta, let's be clear about what the CDC said yesterday. For people who have been vaccinated, gathering with other people who have been vaccinated, they said you can get together, including indoors, without masks on. What are the limits on that for people who say, okay, great, I can go see my friends, or I can travel to see my friends in Florida because they've been vaccinated as well? What did that guidance mean to you?
That guidance means to me that if you want to congregate with other individuals that are close by, another household indoors, one additional household indoors, you can do so unmasked, not distanced. But that when you leave that setting, you need to still be very vigilant, mask, distance in public, because again, of the transmission question, we don't know if vaccines will necessarily stop you from transmitting this virus. It also made it clear that you do this with those that are nearby, that you don't hop on a flight to go see friends who might be vaccinated hundreds of miles away from you. So that's a key piece here. Again, for everybody out there who's saying, well, that doesn't make sense, there will be a version two shortly, I imagine, that will allow for travel, allow for more normalization. It's coming, just not quite yet.
All right, Dr. Vin Gupta, who's been treating COVID patients since the very beginning of all this. Great to see you, as always. Joe, as I said, when that announcement was made yesterday, there were cheers going up from grandparents across America saying, I can hug my children, I can hug my grandparents again. As Dr. Gupta says, as long as they're close by, they don't want people traveling all over the place to do that.
Well, you know, I mean, some are saying the guidelines go too far. Others are saying the guidelines don't go far enough. But if you're getting a vaccination, if you're vaccinated and you haven't seen your family in some time, I think it's pretty certain people are going to be getting on planes and they're going to go see their family members. I actually understand what Lena Wynn's saying. We have to do everything we can do to encourage people to get vaccines. And if you're telling people, if you get this vaccine, you're going to be fine, and then say, well, if you get this vaccine, you're going to be fine, and you go visit your grandparents as long as they live next door to you.
Right.
You know, people go, wait, what? I understand what Dr. Gupta is saying. I certainly hope, though, that they do come out with another set of guidelines sooner rather than later, because all you're doing is discouraging people from getting vaccines if you're saying, oh, well, you can get the vaccine. Your parents that you haven't seen in a year. Yeah, you still can't take your kids to go see their relatives or, you know. So I think, Mika, again, the guidelines. Hopefully there's going to be another phase of guidelines coming from CDC sooner rather than later. We are at a point now in this pandemic where being more conservative with people who've had the vaccine does not seem to me to be a winning strategy in the long term if we're trying to encourage people to get that vaccine so they can return to their normal lives. We can reopen businesses. We can get back to some sort of normalcy.
Yeah, and hopefully as more people are vaccinated, this is less of an issue, but it's that long haul to get the entire country vaccinated. Moving on to politics now, in the latest sign that former President Trump did not win the 2020 election, the Supreme Court yesterday, he didn't, if you can believe it.
Okay, but
the Supreme Court yesterday decided it will not take up the last of Trump's election challenges. In a one-line ruling, which is its normal practice, the court denied his appeal of lower court rulings that upheld Wisconsin's handling of mail-in ballots, completing the high court's wholesale rejection of attempts to overturn the 2020 election.
And again, Willie, let's underline the fact that this is a 6-3 court. Donald Trump actually put three members on that court. Mm-hmm. When Amy Coney Barrett was selected, there were a lot of concerns that he was rushing her selection through so she could have an impact on the election. Mm. I don't know where people got that idea. Well, wait a second. Actually, Donald Trump bragged about the fact that he wanted to get her on the court quickly so she could have a big impact on the outcome of the election challenges. Of course, once again, showing his complete and total ignorance of how federal courts operate, how an independent judiciary operates, and how judges who get lifetime appointments don't really care what he tweets about them.
Yeah, Donald Trump's understanding of the Supreme Court is if I put you on that court, you're there to defend me. You're there to help me. And in this case with Justice Barrett, to help me win the election, to which she said, mm-hmm. No, that's not how this works. To which Justice Kavanaugh said, no, that's not how this works. The people that Donald Trump put there in his mind to help him have not helped him at all. And this last decision is the final slapdown of all these contests and people asking what happened in 2020. Was there a voting irregularity? You still have Mike Pence writing op-eds about that. The courts have now said more than 60 times.
Mike.
The courts have said more than 60 times that these are bogus claims. And now finally, this last one from the Supreme Court should put an end to the conversation. Unfortunately, as we all know, it won't.
Mike Pence. I mean, come on, Mike. Come on. Seriously.
Trump's got a hold on them all.
I cannot say this enough, that I think the real heroes over the past 4 years, I think the people in our government that stood shoulder to shoulder and remain committed to constitutional norms, remain committed to constitutional checks and balances, remain committed mm-hmm. to guaranteeing that Madisonian democracy survived another 4 years, regardless of the chaos that was going on outside the walls of their building, were not just members of the United States Supreme Court, but federal judges across America. And this cannot be said enough. Federal judges across America who were appointed by Republican presidents, federal judges across the country that were appointed by Democratic judges, liberal judges and justices, justices and judges that were Federalist Society members in college, law school, throughout their career. I mean, it really has been remarkable what federal judges, what our independent judiciary has proven over the past 4 years, and that is that they remain the most resilient part and remain really the last best hope to protect our democracy, yeah. to protect our constitutional republic.
So the question is then, where does Trump go next? It seems a lot of people thought things would go where it's going from the very beginning. A money-making venture. Late yesterday, the former president sent out a statement encouraging donors to give money to his Save America PAC, rather than giving to Republicans he dubbed as rhinos. That comes as the Republican National Committee is moving part of its spring donor retreat next month to former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club in Palm Beach, according to reporting from the Washington Post. Wow. The Post notes that the decision to move part of the event to Mar-a-Lago comes amid a spat over the RNC and other Republican organizations' use of Trump's likeness and image in fundraising, as well as anxiety about how Trump plans to use his influence in the 2022 midterms. I mean, he really wants to completely own the Republican Party, and he's bringing it right to Mar-a-Lago. Let's bring in staff writer for The Atlantic magazine, Ann Applebaum, and Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist and associate editor of The Washington Post and MSNBC, political analyst Eugene Robinson joins us as well. Good to have you both.
And not a strongman move at all, saying I am the party and the party is myself.
It must come to me.
Yeah, and it's also it's the final great grift, deciding that he's going to pull money away from the Republican Party and finish him off once and for all.
You're right. I mean, it's pretty definitive proof that Trump has never been interested either in the Republican Party or really in America. His venture into politics was always about himself, his family, his business, his even his psychological needs. He always put those first.
And I think most of the people around him, including most other Republicans, understood that perfectly well. And the great unsolved mystery, really, of the past 4 years, continuing into the present, is why so many of them still continue to go along with it. I mean, look, the potential that he has for destroying the Republican Party remains. He could bring down anybody. He could undermine anyone. And yet they continue to make space for him. They continue to recognize him as the leader. And so many of them still don't want to break away. It is mysterious.
Damn, they're negotiating. They're trying to negotiate with this guy, Gene Robinson. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. I've been saying it for 5 years. A lot of other conservatives that have grown up in the movement have been saying it for 5 years. This is a former Democrat who has become a Republican because he thought they were the easiest target. He could be a racist with birtherism, gain a foothold, and then just use the Republican Party. And that's exactly what he's done. And he's brought more ruin to the Republican Party than any ACLU lawyer or any ghost of Ted Kennedy or any a legion of Nancy Pelosi's. He's caused more damage to this party than anybody else could have ever done. Yeah. He lost the House. He lost the Senate. He lost the White House. And now he's trying to gut their fundraising operations. A guy who's have been a well-known grifter his entire life.
Right. This is the literal definition of insanity. Republicans are continuing to do the same thing. Follow Donald Trump. Obey his every whim and command, and expecting different results. But as you said, they lost the White House. They lost the House of Representatives. They lost the Senate. They are, if they keep it up, probably going to be the rare out of power party that loses seats in the first midterm if they keep following him down this path, because the path leads only to Donald Trump. It's only to feed Donald Trump's coffers and egos. That's the whole purpose, and that's what the Republican Party exists to do right now. And so you see more senators are just kind of bailing. Roy Blunt now is not going to run again. He's going to bail. But rather than bailing, some of these Republicans who know better should stand up to the bully and should try to take their party back. But apparently they won't. Apparently they just won't.
So, Joe, Gene mentioned Roy Blunt retiring. We put up that graphic of five senators now who have announced their retirement. Also, by the way, should add, still waiting to hear about Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson. Fair to say those are, for the most part, establishment Republicans, the kind of guys that you came into Congress with back in 94, maybe.
Right.
So who fills those seats now? That's the question. Is there this Trump movement of candidates like Josh Hawley, for example, people who run in these races to fill those seats? Because what you have in Donald Trump, that release he put out yesterday, just explicitly saying, give me your money. Here's the link. Give me your money, because we're going to take out what he calls rhinos. Now, what's a rhino to Donald Trump? A rhino is anyone who has crossed him ever at any point. A rhino is someone perhaps who voted for his impeachment, someone who didn't support him in his effort to overturn an election. So that's who rhinos are to him. The question will be, are those also the rhinos to voters writ large across the country, Republican voters, 74 million of whom voted for him?
Well, I mean, it has been lately. It has been over the past 4.5 years that they have defined conservatism by whether you support the biggest spending Republican in the history of the party. And Ben Sasse, we saw what Ben Sasse said to his steering committee back in Nebraska when he talked about this personality cult. He said a personality cult is not conservative. And yet Donald Trump is taking us one step further to that personality cult. And so when I hear Lindsey Graham talking about Donald Trump's capable of magic, what magic, Lindsey? The magic that caused Democrats to lose House elections in 2018 by a historic margin? The biggest loser of all time, 2018, the Democrats won by the largest vote margin in U.S. history in a midterm election in 2018. Is that magic? Is it magic for Donald Trump to get in the way and actually cede the two seats in Georgia and the control of the United States Senate to Democrats? Is that magic? Or to be so out of it, so amped up, so freaked out in the first debate that he cost himself the White House. He cost himself re-election. No magic there. Again, it's just grifting, and it's a guy with strongman tactics. And, you know, Anne, all of your works have described how strong men get in power and how they start peeling off the more talented, the more gifted, the more independent players all around them. We're now at, starting to see the establishment of the Republican Party peeling away one by one by one. They just don't want to work in Donald Trump's Republican Party anymore. And it is now Donald Trump's Republican Party.
Yes, and that's actually quite dangerous, because if you look back into history, whenever you see the emergence of extremist movements, and you have to characterize a part of the Trumpist movement as extremist, whenever you see that, the antidote is always the ideologically closest, most moderate movement. In other words, it's moderate conservatives who could do the most to win voters and money and attention away from Donald Trump. You can see this in Europe right now. The German center right, for example, has finally begun to understand how dangerous the German far right is, and has seen there's a German far right party that has very strange links and financial connections to Russia, that uses disinformation, that has been very involved in anti-coronavirus, anti-mask kinds of movements. And finally, the center right has moved itself and started to focus on this party, and is conducting investigations and is seeking to push back. And of course, they are the party that's in the best position to push back. They're the party of, you know, traditional German values, of centrist politics. And really what we need in America is we need more centrist Republicans. We need more real conservatives who can attract other conservatives and who can keep them away from this extremism and remind them that we live in a democracy and that their values of tolerance and that our institutions, you know, Congress and the White House, are by definition shared institutions that you'll always have to share with people who don't agree with you. And so the loss of moderate Republicans, I think, is very dangerous for the entire country.
And Anne, you talked about real conservatives. I'm curious what your thoughts are on the judiciary, the federal judiciary, members of the Federalist Society, who time and time again have voted to uphold the Constitution and strike down Donald Trump's baseless claims of widespread voter fraud, Republican appointed federal judges, as well as, of course, Democratic appointed federal judges, the federal judiciary and what it's done over the past 4.5 years and continues to do. What's your thought on that? And how important has that been to keeping this constitutional republic, keeping some of the constitutional safeguards in place?
You're really right to point to that, because, of course, the federal judiciary represents a problem for a lot of progressives and liberals and even centrists, and that there are people on the Supreme Court and on other courts who have views that, you know, about, you know, that we don't all agree with, or not everybody in America agrees with. But the point is that when it comes down to it, these are, so far, and we're very lucky so far, these are people who believe in the Constitution, they believe in the rule of law, and rule of law means that the law decides what happens and not people in power. This isn't a country like China or like Russia, where we have rule by law. In other words, where whoever is in power gets to decide what the law is. No, the law exists separately from whoever is the president or whoever controls Congress. And it's the job of the judiciary to seek to enforce that law. And as long as we have people who believe in that, then we have some protection against, you know, against demagogues and against people who seek to undermine democracy.
All right, everyone stay in place. Still ahead on Morning Joe, the latest on when the House will vote on the Senate's passed version of the COVID relief bill and what Speaker Nancy Pelosi is saying about Republicans who don't get on board with the bill. Plus, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki will be our guest. You're watching Morning Joe. We'll be right back.
There's something about Trump. There's a dark side, and there's some magic there. What I'm trying to do is just harness the magic. To me, Donald Trump is sort of a cross between Jesse Helms, Ronald Reagan, and P.T. Barnum. I mean, it's just this bigger-than-life deal. He could make the Republican Party something that nobody else I know could make it. It could make it bigger. He could make it stronger. He could make it more diverse. And he also could destroy it.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
34 past the hour, live look at the Capitol. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told reporters yesterday that the House vote on President Biden's COVID relief package may not take place until tomorrow morning. Pelosi said the delay is not due to hang-ups, just that it takes time and it has to be precise. According to Democratic aides, the House is still awaiting processing papers from the Senate. Pelosi was also asked how it will play for Republicans if every GOP lawmaker votes against the relief bill. Here's how she responded.
I feel sad for them that they are so oblivious to meeting the needs of the American people and oblivious to the support that this bill has among Republicans across the country. It is bipartisan in terms of the national support for it. It is bipartisan in terms of the many of the provisions in the bill are Republican provisions that they have initiated and supported in the past.
Jean Robinson, your latest piece for The Washington Post is entitled Democrats Shouldn't Wait for Republicans to Come to Their Senses. I guess Joe Biden would love to see this to be bipartisan. What are the chances?
Well, it's not happening. Maybe there will be, as Lindsey Graham would say, maybe there will be magic and Republicans will wake up. But I'm not seeing it. And so, this COVID relief bill, there was a morning consult poll last week that showed 77% of Americans support this bill, 77%, including 59% of Republicans. And when you go back to those Republicans and you say, but this is from the Democratic Party, this is a Democratic initiative, 53% of Republicans still supported it. This is not rocket science. This should break through to, you would think, at least one Republican in the House or the Senate, but they're just paralyzed and unable to vote for the most popular piece of legislation to come down the pike in a long, long time. I don't understand that politically. Maybe Joe could help me out, but I don't understand the potential political gain in that when you've got those kinds of majorities in favor of the bill.
Well, I could explain it if this party had stayed true to its small government conservative past. But when they all voted lined up and all voted for a massive tax cut that blew as big of a hole in the debt and in fact went to 0.1% of Americans and will not have the positive economic impact that this bill is going to have, then they can't hide behind deficits. They can't hide behind inflationary fears because, as I've said before, Donald Trump came into office. He had a $19 trillion debt. He left with a $27 trillion debt. He was the biggest spending president of all time, Republican or Democrat alike. So, Anne, I guess the next question is, you've been studying center-right parties across the world that have become more illiberal over the past several years. What's the pathway back? Is there any evidence that there is a pathway back, or do those parties have to go eventually the way of the Whigs and be replaced by another center-right party?
I mean, there's always a pathway back. I mean, look, you know, for people, it's simply irresponsible to be too pessimistic. There's a pathway back either in the moderates in the Republican Party pulling the extremists back towards the center. There's a pathway back in Republican voters saying, finally, enough is enough. We're going to support people who at least talk about reality and aren't wrapped up in conspiracy theories. There's a pathway back actually looking, for example, at reform of the internet, something I've just written about that's appearing today, and looking at how we end some of the partisanship, we end the polarization, we find ways to have people having civil conversations again. I mean, there's always a way back, but of course, there isn't necessarily a way back.
What do we say, though, Anne? Excuse me, Willie, I'm sorry. What do we say then, Anne, about a Republican Party, though, who is now focused on passing one bill after another in state legislatures that's going to make it harder for Americans to vote? Like we saw in Georgia, it seems that they're starting to understand that they're going to be a minority party and they have to do whatever they can to stay in power, even though the majority of Americans want Democrats running things.
Yes, that's the danger. That is the truly dangerous aspect of the possible future of the party, is that faced with the choice of trying to become a majority party, trying to appeal to all Americans, or trying to win by, you know, through voter suppression and through preventing people from having access to the ballot, that they're going to choose the latter. And if they do that, then you're right. I mean, then the stresses on American democracy are not going to disappear. They will increase.
So there are progressives, many of them in the United States Senate, who say, look, Mr. President, Republicans are never going to vote with us. It's just a fact of life. So we ought to get rid of the filibuster. Press Secretary Jen Psaki was asked about that yesterday.
The president's preference is not to get rid of the filibuster. Look at what we've been able to accomplish in the last 6 weeks. He's on the verge of passing a historic relief bill that's going to cut child poverty in half and create 7 million jobs. He's met with members on both sides of the aisle in the Oval, and he wants to continue to work on a bipartisan basis. And we believe there are opportunities to do exactly that.
Mr. President, can you pass voting rights with the Senate filibuster in its current form, do you think?
I can talk to you about that later.
So, Gene, progressives say that, look, this process that we're living through right now is evidence that you should get rid of the filibuster, because if you can't get Republicans to work with you on a bill that gives money to their own constituents, that helps them get out from this avalanche of the last year under the restrictions of COVID and all the economic crisis that has flowed from it, they're never going to work with you. So you might as well plow through and get rid of the filibuster. What do you make of that? Is there enough support for that?
Well, it doesn't seem that there is. I mean, you know, Joe Manchin, Kristen Sinema, probably Dianne Feinstein, some other Democrats in the Senate are not willing to just get rid of the filibuster. So that seems to be, you know, taking that final step seems to be beyond the pale of possibility at this point. However, I think there are more easily could be reform of the filibuster, change of filibuster to make, for example, the minority that wants a filibuster bill actually filibuster the bill, actually stand up there and talk for theoretically forever until the majority gives up. There are ways to sort of flip the filibuster instead of requiring that 60 senators be there to vote to end debate and to go ahead and vote on a bill, require that 41 senators be there to vote to continue debate and put the onus on those who are filibustering rather than those who are being filibustered. That's an intermediate step. But I think you could get the Democratic majority to go. And that might, some of these ideas I heard from my friend Norm Ornstein, who has followed the Senate for a long time. But some of these ideas actually could change things by just raising the cost of filibustering a bill. Right now, it's just simple. Just say, we got 41 votes, and we don't have to prove it, and we don't have to talk. We just stop the bill.
Yeah, Norm Ornstein's column in the Post was positive, and it's a good way forward. It certainly is a good first step where you make people who want to filibuster, you make them stand up, do their Mr. Smith goes to Washington routine, and keep them talking until they can't talk anymore. I mean, it's go back. You know, and again, this whole idea that the filibuster is sacrosanct and goes back to America's founding is just absolutely ridiculous. It's not. And so they certainly can reform it if Joe Manchin doesn't want to do away with it. And I've long had concerns about doing away with the filibuster because I don't want the Senate to be a glorified version of the House with majoritarian rule. But at the same time, they've got to make it a lot tougher to filibuster a bill and make them all stand on the floor, make them stay there. And make it much tougher for Republicans to block one bill after another, especially this voting rights bill. And I'm wondering whether they can have an exception. I mean, Republicans made an exception for Supreme Court justices, just like Harry Reid made exception for federal court judges generally before. I'm wondering why they couldn't make an exception for voting rights. Does that not rise to the level? Is that not worth an exception? Is it not worth an exception to the filibuster that we want to guarantee that every American that wants to vote can vote? It seems pretty simple to me.
Coming up, the latest in the investigation into sexual harassment accusations against New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. As the calls for him to resign grow, and now there's talk of an impeachment effort as well. We'll be right back.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable, high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
It's gotten to be worse by the day, and fewer people believe the governor, and that's a very sad state of affairs for our state. But, you know, we're going to overcome it. And we're going to move forward. I just don't see how he can govern effectively when fewer and fewer people believe him.
All right. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio again weighed in on the harassment allegations against Governor Andrew Cuomo. Yesterday, the New York State Attorney General appointed two lawyers to lead the investigation. Jun Kim, a former acting U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, and Ann Clark, an employment discrimination lawyer, to helm the probe. In a statement, Kim said of the investigation, quote, these are serious allegations that demand a rigorous and impartial investigation. We will act judiciously and follow the facts wherever they lead. In a separate statement, Clark added, quote, the people of New York deserve an exhaustive and independent investigation into these allegations, and I am committed to seeing it through. Governor Cuomo has denied harassing women and said he was sorry for how his behavior made them feel. A number of New York Democrats have called on Governor Cuomo to resign, and now Republican lawmakers are pushing for his impeachment. But the GOP can't force a vote on the issue without majority support, so it will ultimately be up to Democrats whether a resolution moves forward. Impeachment would require a significant number of Democratic votes in the House Assembly, and removal would require 42 votes in the Senate.
That's really not going to happen. Andrew Cuomo, I mean, there's just hardly any chance that Andrew Cuomo is ever going to resign. We're going to have the investigation, see how that plays out. But it would be really surprising, unless there were really even more evidence. There's no evidence he's going to be moved out of the governor's mansion. You know, though, these scandals that have come up recently are actually taking all the oxygen out of, I think, the scandal that could have driven him out of office, that actually could have had him liable criminally. Mm-hmm. And that has to do with the nursing homes and whether he was dishonest, whether his administration was dishonest with how they reported those nursing home deaths. So
it's interesting.
So while this these scandals for alleged sexual harassment obviously are a headache for the governor, they are eclipsing a scandal that could actually pose even greater political risks to him.
Coming up, one of our next guests says the new guidance from the CDC doesn't mean a coronavirus vaccination is a license to do whatever you want. Dr. Zeke Emanuel, who was a member of the Biden Transition COVID Advisory Board, joins the conversation ahead. Morning Joe, we'll be right back.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.